Well, it's a dynamic duo, we'll be back again. Nothing back with DJ, you better pack it in. You're lacking sense, trying to tangle with us. Go with the big black bullies in the back of the bus. Just smacking you up, and stealing your lunch money. You're such a buddy, you're feeling just a touch. Only by the end of the day, that's understandable. What can I say, you got strong man to be.
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
I was going to say, speaking of historical things that are doomed to fail,
this podcast,
the Kangs keep on Kangsing.
I don't buy that at all. I think the Kings have got a lot of heat for picking not a fucking guard because they have 97 of them and they picked for needs. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think anyone's chipping them for that. I think more people are chipping them.
I think lots of people are chipping them for that. They're like, oh, there's Kings in a pick, Jaden Ivey. Best, you've got to pick the best player available. And it's like, but they've got 97 guards. It's not Marvin Bagley.
I more saw it as
I love how we've gone from 0 to 100 on the fucking draft nerdometer. we're in that, folks. This is the Balls Podcast. I'm Doc East Bezo. We're in the kind of the netherworld between the NBA draft and NBA free agency opening. Kind of a taint, if you will. It's got a lot of shaving rash. It's not particularly attractive, but we're just kind of waiting for something interesting to happen.
Well,
I'm not sure how that fits in with the taint.
Taint
misbehaving.
Should we talk about your man Dame then, who just threw a grenade into Twitter NBA today?
Well, the fact that all he needed to do was just post up a Photoshop of KD in a fucking Blazers jersey pointing to Dame as clearly the guy who should be leading here. That's all it takes to wind these people up. I think Dame has just played at chef's kiss. He's just gone, I'm just going to wind up all these pricks. He might have even raised it with KD beforehand. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't give a fuck to, because it's Dame. He does not give a fuck. But he knows that there is so little content in this. It's a little bit like the period between Christmas and New Year. It's like that for the NBA season. It's as I've said before, the taint. I'm going to keep using that metaphor until I've discussed myself. Nothing's happening until something happens. And we're stuck waiting for KD to end up on the Blazers. Notwithstanding any of the fucking cap gymnastics that would be required, it would first require Kyrie to not re-up with the Nets. And that seems to be where we start with this particular ludicrous NBA Twitter fantasy exercise, which is to try and figure out a way to make shit interesting until some contract gets signed next week.
Yeah, because the stupid thing is, right, KD's not Ben Simmons. He's not sitting out a whole season. The dude would fucking, you know, tear his own fingernails out rather than not play basketball for that long while he...
He had a year of that. It sucked. He hated it.
He's signed for 4 years. The Nets aren't trading him. No, they're not. Like, he'll just rock up and play. He might bitch about it and, you know, subtweet them and, you know, not make it comfortable. But if...
How many years did he play in OKC?
Eight.
Many.
Yeah.
He spent a lot of years playing basketball in Oklahoma City for some of the biggest cunts in NBA ownership. He's going to be fine.
Oh, yeah. Can we?
He just wants to hoop. All he's ever said is that he wants to hoop.
Can we pivot to that where my fucking sons tried to spin their absolute cheapness of not being able to run a scouting department because Robert Sarver won't sign the checks into this, we are ahead of the game. Bullshit with Kevin.
Our competitive advantage is that we're not going to bother signing any cheap people in the draft. Look,
oh my God.
Look, I will say there is a case of this working, but it's cross sport. It's the LA Rams, the current Super Bowl champions, the general manager of the LA Rams in the Super Bowl victory parade was wearing a t-shirt of himself as a meme, which was very popular on NFL Twitter. His face, Les Snead's face, with just the Michael Jordan-esque line, fuck them picks. Because he generally was just trade picks because they didn't give a fuck about the picks. They'd rather just get talent in the building in order to win now.
Sure, trade the picks.
I don't think that's where they are.
But the problem with the Suns is not that they trade the picks. That would be fine. The problem is that they were trying to say, we don't scout and we go with these older players and it's way more successful. Meanwhile, the guy that they picked 2 years ago is out of the league, and Halliburton is one of the best young players in the NBA who they passed on.
Yeah, but individual pick successes and failures, you know, everybody has them. I think the problem is that what they should have said is this is our strategy for now. This isn't our strategy for forever. But I suppose that for as long as the strategy works, it's going to be James Jones's strategy. And when it stops being successful, then James Jones has to find another job anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That he said it was their strategy forever, because their strategy will change when the person who comes in to replace James Jones turns up.
I just wonder what James Jones would do if Sava gets booted tomorrow and they get a Bormer-type owner who's like...
He would probably get the arse anyway, because true. If you get a new owner, get a new generally owner. They broom you out of there.
But do you know what I mean?
Like, he knows that his success in his job is tied to Robert Sava, and that it matters what you say in public.
Yeah,
and to keep your job, you'll say all kinds of bullshit. I'm not gonna publicly own him just because he said stuff to keep his job. I think that's entirely fair enough. I understand that instinct entirely. It doesn't make it sensible, but I totally understand why he did it.
Hey, did you see the one of my assistant coaches has this little saying about, you know, you have to build culture every day, right? You have to. It's something you constantly have to work at, and as soon as you let go of
listen, this Bezo doesn't have any assistant coaches. He's talking about his primary school children, and he just writes down things for them to repeat.
Actually, Curtis does assistant coach the under eights. That's true.
And he's barraging these 5-year olds with culture is something you have to build every day. It's so easy to tear down, but it's so difficult to build.
That's all right. Your 8-year olds are like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Just barking out the sort of slogans you see painted up around the walls of AFL dressing rooms. Me, not we.
Sticks are amazing. And Detroit. So, you know, Detroit.
I got that the wrong way around. We, not me, is probably what you
are. Me, not we.
That's why you keep losing.
Me, not we is the old South Sydney when they had, it was the guy that shat in Schlossy's shoe.
The great Queenslander, Julia O'Neill.
Yeah, that's right. That was their slogan. That was just a reminder that they had against all the walls at Souths.
That was poo, not we, you know.
No, Detroit, you know, they lucked into Jaden Ivey, but the kid has this really strong history. You know, his whole family have played professional sport or college sport in Detroit. And so they
did. His mum was played for the WNBA team there, and his dad played for the Lions, I think, the NFL team.
I think his granddad played for the Lions and his dad played for the college football side, I think. But anyway.
Yeah, and remember Jabari Parker? He was going to go to he wanted to go to Utah because that's where all the Mormons were, and he ended up in fucking Milwaukee and then Chicago, and then he was out the league. Those lovely stories don't last for very fucking long.
Oh, no, it's more the way that Detroit were able to recognize that he has a history there and tie into it straight away. Like, if you've got a player that...
The marketing was excellent. It's not going to make him any more or less likely to succeed. And I am not here for fucking NBA Twitter deciding that Detroit are going to be the new fucking, you know, the new team they all decide are going to be any good, and then they discover that they're fucking terrible because they're Detroit.
I think there's two sort of Memphis have sort of given front offices a template on how to build a team, right? You don't necessarily have to get all these trade assets and then trade them for, you know, a star. Like the traditional way Memphis could have built is like they probably should have cashed in some of their bits for Bradley Beal, but they're like, no, we'll just, we'll build slowly. We'll get better every year by internal development.
It wasn't that slowly.
No, but it wasn't.
I mean, Memphis are just rolling with the OKC model from back when they were the Sonics.
Mm.
Get Russ and KD in two consecutive drafts and, you know, suck for a tiny bit, but then suddenly, you know, put Serge Ibaka there and you know, before too long.
Yeah.
You're in the conference finals. You're in the fucking NBA.
Well,
finals.
That was the other...
And then you're never there again, which was kind of sad.
That was the other thing I really liked about what OKC did, which was... They sort of seem to think that...
Yet more kicking the can down the road.
No, I don't reckon so. I reckon they know that they've got their guys now, but then they sort of looked at the rest of the draft and went, well, what's the hardest position to fill? it's half decent wings, you know, like.
And how can we fleece the Jets doing something dumb?
So,
on the off chance they end up with Kyrie, who is literally like, it's like when your two craziest friends hook up, the Knicks and Kyrie are perfect for each other in a way that is not good for either of them.
Oh, totally deserved though. I want to see Tibbs and Kyrie, like Tibbs's work ethic.
I'm not sure Tibbs deserves this. I mean, I'm not that much of a fan of him, but I'm not sure why Tibbs needs to catch the strays of having to coach.
Tibbs's work ethic against a guy that just like randomly takes seven games off because he wants to go see his family, or you know, he'd like to go on a protest march, or
it was his birthday. It was his birthday. It took a mental health break around his birthday. Obviously, he finds it really depressing to be 28.
So, like, that'll be fun. Like the Knicks fans absolutely crowing that they've triumphed over the Nets by taking away the Nets' biggest problem would be fun. That would be hilarious.
When they raise a batter for cap space, that's also hilarious.
Like, I really want to see a sign and trade with Obi Toppin, and Toppin to just like absolutely have a blinder of a career with Durant and Simmons. That would be hilarious. there's just so many delicious storylines with the Knicks getting Kyrie.
And almost all of them are completely made up because we're waiting for something to fucking happen. I mean, it wasn't like you and I are not people who watch children's basketball. We don't watch college. We watch a bit of Australian NBL, but, you know, we're not up with the prospects. We're not exactly draft gurus. So when they said, you know, these are the three guys who are going to go first, second, and third, but they might go in a different order, I'm sure you and I both went, right. Yeah. That sounds like last year and the year before. And then it turned out the guy who was going to go second went first and the guy who was going to go third went second. Nobody knows whether these guys will be any good. It depends entirely on their fit to the team and how competent the team is. It's got absolutely nothing to do with their, you know, how well they played at college or even if they played at college at all. But, a Paolo Banchero, whatever that is, went first, even though he'd never actually interviewed with with Orlando. And then there was a dude called Chet. I don't think there should be dudes called Chet in the NBA, but, you know, apparently that's the thing they're allowing now. Apparently he's skinnier than, you know, Kevin Durant in ultra-marathon mode. And Jabari Smith, who apparently should have been the number one draft pick, went third. Yeah, so
poor dude went to Houston.
Good luck to Houston. They're accruing a whole lot of talent that will never actually evaluate itself into anything good because they're Houston and they'll never achieve anything.
A couple of interesting things to watch with the draft, though. Last year was particularly like this acceleration of guys in the draft that were competent, like straight away. Like even, you know, Herb Jones, but even...
You could play now in a way that, you know, normally your rookies, you know, Michael Carter-Williams was rookie of the year one year. That shows you what the level of rookies used to be.
That's right. Like you think of how good Herb Jones was, but then even at the back end of the second round, a guy like Alvarado being a pest to us, someone like Chris Paul or you know, even just being an absolute fucking nightmare for the Clippers. Like, you know, that guy was way down the draft. If we get another year of, you know, the 10th to the 17th pick being competent first-year players, it might really change, or A, it might accelerate some of the crappier veterans being washed out of the league. Like if they're just constantly...
Hey, if anything, this podcast should be
veteran positive,
you know, positive towards crappy, washed out veterans. It should be you and I.
But then the other interesting one was another two high quality high school players have gone to the elite team. So already they reckon that Scoot, who's in his second year with the elite, I think, is like going to be a top three pick.
Does Scoot know Chet?
This is Scoot and Chet.
Look, you can say all these things about the decline of America. We've seen plenty of evidence over the last week or so about the decline of America. But
48 hours.
Just the evolution, just the appearance of kids called Chet and Scoot. Surely that tells you that it's a failed state.
there was some interesting names. What was the Canadian guy that went to the Pacers? Oh, I can't think of his name.
Oh, I blanked on it because I saw it was the Pacers. I was like, oh, you know. Yeah, the poor. Enjoy. beige man goes to beige club. Who's never seen from, never seen or heard from again. He'll probably be a trade filler in about 3 years.
I just think the guy that went to Detroit is just destined to be an absolute awesome player because the Kings are the Kings. And
well, the Jaden Ivey, the guy who sounds like one of Kim and Kanye's kids.
You know, just being the next pick after the Kings pick is like, it's, you know, like the
good luck charm
of the NBA.
What was the last good Piston? Who was the last good Piston?
Well, Cade Cunningham, I guess.
He's not good yet.
Beef stew.
You're buying into this fucking NBA draft Twitter circle jerk. Do something first before we say. The problem is that it's a little bit like, I'm going to quote a surfing podcast I listen to. Dave Prodan, who works for the WSL, does a podcast on there and often talks about the fact that the surfing industry, particularly through its peak period, it was obsessed with potential. It would actually pay much bigger contracts to potential, you know, young potential stars than it ever did to the established stars. And it's like that with the way that NBA Twitter thinks about draft prospects. They're so obsessed with the potential that most of this potential won't work out. Most of it will wash out. Most of it, if they turn out to be adequate starters in the league, then that's an achievement. But everyone is far too excited by the idea of hope trafficking, by the idea of what could be.
The flip side of that, right, is the OKC, which everyone was like, a lot of the draft stuff I listened to were just like, you know, OKC are this, the process 2.0 and Presti's just kicking it down the road. It's like, hang on, he was in the finals 2 years ago, guys. It's not like he's had 10 years. Presti
was not in the finals 2 years ago. Presti's never been in the finals.
OKC were in the NBA.
They were in a first round playoff series and got their ass handed to them by Dame.
Yeah, but
that's not the finals. That's a first round playoff series.
Do you know how much Sacramento would kill to be in a first round route? Like they would absolutely destroy everybody to be in that.
So the bar is being Sacramento is now the bar. Is that what you're telling
me? No. I guess what I'm saying is OKC get talked
that you'll make
about
any
like
excuse to justify what Sam Presti's doing, which is in any other market would be fraudulent. It would be stealing people's money.
I don't know.
Nobody should watch that basketball team. Nobody should pay money to those people. They are committing fraud on the people who support them, and they have for fucking years.
I don't know. I think they're at least a lot more honest than, say, the Knicks or the Kings that are just, I guess, hopeless.
They're genuinely incompetent. They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, Presti's incompetent by design.
What all this needs is promotion and relegation.
Yes, that's right. This would you really...
Stop rewarding shithousery. Mm-hmm. Start punishing it.
Yeah.
And then see what happens.
Yeah, a promotion and relegation with a draft would be interesting, wouldn't it? Whereas if you got promoted and got the number one pick, that would be awesome. If you were the
Now, what you need to do is they need to unentangle the draft as a incentive for sucking.
Which, the
thing I've never understood about American sport is that they are they're psychotic assholes about capitalism to the point where anybody who suggests something even remotely socialist is run out of town as a communist.
Like your healthcare.
Except in their pro sports, where they demand socialism. They demand subsidies for the failing teams. They demand the best possible talent flows to the worst possible teams to keep their little fucking walled garden of owners afloat. The most astonishing hypocrisy.
I actually think that the way that they've got it now is not too bad, because you can, as a coach in a crappy side, like you can have a crappy side and still try and win, and it's not really going to damage your draft prospects the way that it used to. The way they flatten the draft a lot, like you don't see these absolute rancid tank jobs. Like OKC were still trying to win games. Not that far from the end of the season, you know, that they weren't trying to actively suck as much as they probably would have 5 years ago.
They just passively sucked.
They just passively sucked, right? It's like passive heating. It just happened. It was there.
I quite like the idea. It was floated on one of the podcasts I listened to this week. It might have been Amin and Tom on Basketball Illuminati. The idea that the problem with the draft, and it's massively unfair to the talent coming in. I mean, they've got no say in where they go and any of that sort of stuff. Mm. But if you, instead of giving, you know, weighted draft odds in favor of the teams that are shit. You just give a weighted transfer kitty for free agent rookie signings, and everyone has a crack. Basically, it's like rookie free agency. Everyone who was eligible for the draft, it's a free agency. But the teams at the bottom of the draft have a bigger salary cap in order to buy. And you know, if you want to be, you know, if you're fucking Jaden Ivey or Paolo Banchero, and you want to play for the Warriors, that's fine. You're going to be playing for $2.50 in a Pizza Hut coupon, whereas you know you could be playing for the Sacramento, and they could pay you $5 million. It's up to you, man.
That's a really good idea. Where do you want to be? Because I did hear a bit about how
but it gives them agency. That's the key thing.
OKC is actually very popular amongst first-year players at the moment. Like that, they have a really good reputation for trying to maximize the most out of their talent, which is fair enough. You know, that's sort of what they have to do. But we were
they're a developmental side. They're not a basketball team.
We were talking offline though about, you know, we talked last week about, you know, the Warriors won. And
we never talk offline. We never speak off this podcast. We can't stand each other.
The front office sort of, you know, did everything that they possibly could. But then some of the sort of backroom stuff that I read about and heard about this week is the Warriors aren't just running like a coaching staff to win NBA championships. They're essentially running OKC's coaching staff at the same time for their young players. So
yeah, they're running a second program, which you can do when you have San Francisco tech boom money.
And not only are they running a second program, but they have Draymond Green and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson to come in and like be guest lecturers to their rookie class, which is like, how cool is that? If you're an assistant, if you're the head of development, as Kenny Atkinson is, and it's like, oh, hey, Draymond, we need you to come and give a masterclass on, you know, how to talk a defensive unit across the court. And we're going to show all this film, but we just need you to come in and, like, you know, point at the screen and give some gravitas to it. Oh, yeah, sure. I can spend, you know, 45 minutes doing that. It's like, it's
by the way, what's gravitas? Is that just swearing and kicking people in the balls?
Yeah, probably. In Draymond's case, absolutely. Yes. But like, you reflect that against the Suns going, oh, no, we only need three scouts and they're going to stay at home. They're actually going to go to Europe or travel to any games.
They're just going to
watch our own training sessions, and that's going to be enough. Meanwhile, you know, Golden State have like a whole separate coaching staff just for their young guys. Oh, fuck, it's depressing. It really is.
Yeah, but they've pivoted hard into the end of CP3. If you've got CP3, then you've got to pivot hard into the only thing that's important for the next 2 to 3 years is getting him parts around him that can make him win.
Sure.
It does not matter about the kids. It does not fucking matter because those kids are not going to be relevant in a way that's going to – this is your only championship. You don't get many championship windows, and this is your one.
No, our one's already closed. It's gone. Gone, unless they can fleece Utah for a sign and trade for Gobert, I actually think that would work.
But maybe what they can do is trade them a jersey that isn't disgusting. Have you seen those black and yellow things?
Oh, the Utah ones.
They literally look like, you know.
I would be embarrassed to have them for the Love Slugs, my social touch team. They are
so.
What the fuck is going on there?
If you go to fucking, it's not IGA, but it's one of the really budget fucking.
Like Foodworks?
Franklin's used to have it. Black and gold used to be a home brand. Yeah, yeah. It literally looks like black and gold home brand packaging.
Fuck.
It is so budget. And the funny thing is that the guy from. Look these up on the internet, folks. They look fucking terrible. They're just dog shit. It's clearly the new owner has said, we need a new look. And they've gone, well, this is a new look. And he said, yes. And then about 30 seconds later, he's gone, no. And it's clear the story that was written by the guy from the Salt Lake Tribune has basically said, everybody hates these jerseys, including everybody at the Utah Jazz. But now they've committed to them. They have to play it out. And that's why they keep trying to push them. The purple and mountainy kind of retro stuff, and says, so this is the stuff we're actually going to wear, but there's also this nasty looking fucking black and yellow thing that we apparently is our look now.
But like, you know, you and I both dabble in a bit of design in our jobs, right? And it, like, no matter what you're doing, you show some other people, right? You show them.
Oh, well, I never do. I just launch my thing. Like, this is what it is. If you don't like it, you fucking do it.
Maybe you should go be the graphic designer for the Jazz. But it's just like, did you not show this to someone? Like,
you know what I would have done if I was the graphic designer at the Jazz? I would have said, you know that fucking that gradient shit? Let's do that for the next 30 years because that ruled.
Mm. And it's actually reflective of Utah, right? Like, I watch a lot of, you know, falling off a hill on a bike in Utah, and that's what
I do too. But at the moment they're in Ashen, it's raining a lot.
That's what Utah looks like, you know.
Yeah, brown.
Yeah,
different shades of brown, and also massively, massively homophobic, racist, and misogynist.
I don't know how you translate that into a jersey. Like,
just have Danny Ainge's face on the jersey, I think, is basically.
Like a pride jersey, but like reverse all the colours, maybe? Like a negative.
Just monochrome.
All negative.
Just a monochrome pride jersey.
That's the
just
Nets.
Every colour is beige.
That's the Nets jersey.
Every colour is white somehow.
Have we missed anything about the draft?
No, not really, because we don't know anything about the draft, and nobody knows anything about the fucking draft.
This is the thing. Stupid thing.
They have so much fucking dialogue and so much narrative around the fucking draft. And it's like, we don't know what any of these players are going to be like. There'll be somebody, and this is the thing that, again, that podcast that Amin and Tom do, Tom Abistrad busted out the stat that, you know, if you compare the outputs of the players, the metrics of the players who were picked, like in the bottom five of the first round with players in the middle five of the first round over the past 5 years, the players who get picked at the bottom do better. Now, that's primarily because they're going to better teams, but it's clearly that the amount of talent is much flatter than we're led to believe.
Well,
like the difference in talent between the guy who gets picked first and the guy who gets picked 12th or 27th is probably much more marginal than the difference in player development between the team that finished arse last and gets the first pick,
the team
up the pointy end.
Okay,
so what are we fucking doing? No, these are just names.
Two things there. Someone tweeted out the which is endlessly hilarious, the draft pictures of the last four MVPs, and of course Jokic's picture is the Taco Bell commercial because you never actually saw him getting his cap from Denver because they were in a commercial and there was a Taco Bell ad. But that just sort of goes to prove the point.
I thought you meant he was in Taco Bell at the time.
No, well, that could have been
because that would also fit the brand.
No, he never got on the screen. Like there was literally a Taco Bell commercial with some
random Serbian prick.
Yeah, but and this is like we've talked about this multiple times, right? It's the talent, but the multiplier is where you go and what they're going to do with the talent. You know. Sacramento, you've got to be super fucking talented to succeed in their system where you're going to get 9 coaches in 4 years. However, our man Dyson Daniels, right, has gone to pretty much the perfect situation where you've got a whole heap of guys that like to shoot that need a connector who can move the ball around and defend his ass off, but then his weakness is shooting, and you've got one of the best shooting coaches in the fucking NBA on that, like, that is just the perfect place for him to go. Like, he can come off the bench and show off his strength straight away while he works on his weakness with the development guys that New Orleans have. That's a really fucking smart pick.
And also, as you said, as you mentioned, when you referenced Herb Jones and
Alvarado.
Alvarado, I was going to say Kenyonero, before... It's easier for a rookie to make an impact on defense.
Yes.
And I think that's really important because if you're the sort of player that Dyson Daniels looks like he is, you could make an impact in year one in a way that would be harder if you were the same kind of player but on the other side of the ball.
Yeah. And like, if you're a rookie who basically touches the ball and passes it off to one of the superstars straight away in a really good position for them to score, you're going to be pretty popular with your teammates, I would think.
Yeah.
Like, and that's his skill.
And that's a team that kind of needs to do something next year. They can't fuck about anymore. This has to be the year when they kind of they do something.
And
CJ has made a tangible difference to that club since he got there. But this is the get off the pot year for the Pelicans.
It all hinges on one guy, right? Like, if he can play 20 minutes a game for 60 games, with CJ and Ingram and all their other pieces, then they're a fucking dangerous side. If he has another year where he plays 10 games, then...
then he's Greg Oden and it's over.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and same with, you know, guys that go to the Spurs might not necessarily be the most talented guys, but the Spurs will extract, you know, the maximum amount of moo out of the cow.
Yeah.
I don't know. There seems to be franchises where you have to be, you just have to be transcendent to succeed, and there's other franchises like, well, we are going to make sure that if you have a chance to succeed, we'll give you the best shot. And that's why you get the Jokic's and the the Curry's and the guys that are further down the draft that weren't the, you know, the Durant's or the LeBron's of the world that were just destined to succeed, that overachieve what everyone thought they were going to be.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I am encouraged, though, that the Kings drafted for need, because at least it indicates that they're aware of what their needs are.
That's right.
Like, they're now it's like they're now self-aware enough to actually be able to recognize, oh, we have a lot of guards. Yeah. Maybe we need non-guard.
Yeah.
And that they're just starting to pick them. So obviously the new general manager and coach. I mean, Mike Brown must have still been drunk when he rocked up to that press conference and declared that Sabonis and Fox?
Or, yeah, I think that's who he was saying. They were
a top three combination in the league. I guess he was hoping to channel a bit of that Mark Jackson before Mark Jackson got fired, when he claimed that Steph and Clay were, you know, the number one shooting backcourt in the league. Turns out he was right. You know, heartbreaking. The worst person you know has made a great point.
I was actually thinking of Gentry after the Warriors won their first finals, and he was like screaming down the camera to Anthony Davis, you know, you and me next year, baby, you and me next year. I was like, oh, that didn't go so well.
No. Alvin Gentry last seen.
Yes.
As
well, he just got fired. He got fired relieving, from the Kings job.
That's right. He was the one who got it covered for the fucking, I don't think he wants to be a head coach again.
No.
Because he knows, you being a black man, probably only be given a shit team, which seems to be the way of the world.
All right, Doc, shall we come back and talk some tunes?
Yes, we should definitely not talk about the cricket.
No, let's not. Though I am happy that Maxi is back in the Test squad. That's where I'll leave my.
Yeah, finally, Australian cricket Twitter can shut the fuck up about Glenn Maxwell. Jesus, you people. He's not Dean Jones. You don't have to have the same kind of weird fetish. We went through this shit fucking 30 years ago. He's just a cricketer. And a fairly fucking flighty one at that. He can't be depended on. Otherwise, he would have played more Test cricket. Yeah. Fuck's sake.
Yeah, Victorians are a different breed.
Victorians need to be banned from speaking in public.
Especially about sport. All right, Doc. I'll catch you on the flip side.
Just in general.
See ya.